Let's see if we can continue the conversation from where we left off. But before we do that, exactly, let us all take a moment to pay homage to He who is the sagacious one, the most magnificent one, the infinitely compassionate one, He who is the fount of wisdom, the all-knowing one, the omniscient one, our guide, our master, He who has delivered us the path and has taught us the way out of suffering once and for all. It is to His name we make this veneration. And also as we do that, let us remind ourselves that we have brought ourselves here with purpose. So this is as much a reminder of our purpose being here, as much as it is our veneration to our Lord Buddha. Having made that veneration, we will now observe the precepts and commence today's talk.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
We are all here to fight our common enemy. That is what unites us. Besides that, I think we are all very different. But those differences mean nothing when there is something so prominent, when something so significant, when something that is so pervasive across all our lives, that stands out, that common factor that unites us. We're all here to deal with the suffering that we experience in our lives. The good news is, just as we discussed manifestations last week, suffering itself is a manifestation. When something's a manifestation, it cannot exist without its causes. It can only exist for as long as the causes exist. Isn't that good news? Heck, that's not good news, that's fantastic news. Because what does that tell us? If we know that suffering is a manifestation, and if we can only remain and prevail in our lives for as long as the causes that bring about suffering exist, what does that tell us? Here's what it can tell us. If we can discover those causes, if we can find out what those causes are, then what can we do about it? We can eradicate it for good. That is your journey to Buddhahood. A Buddha is someone who is free of suffering. Now, of course, when we talk about Buddhas, there are three types of Buddhas. We know that there is a Supreme Buddha. We know that there is the Silent Buddha or the Paccheka Buddha. And we know that there is an Arahant Buddha. Once again, the only thing that is common between these three Buddhas is that they're all free of suffering. Everything else is different. So it makes sense to find what is common and then deal with that. The reason that people seem to be lost no matter where you look, is because they're so focused on what sets them apart. People are so focused about what sets them, what makes them different from each other. See, great leaders, great philosophers, religious leaders, if you wish to call them that, come to this world from time to time, and they teach what they know, as best they know, to deliver mankind from suffering. They help us to identify what is common amongst us. But just take a moment to think about what people use religion for today. When those leaders, when those religious philosophers, they deliver the Dhamma. It could be Christian Dhamma, it could be Islamic Dhamma, it could be Buddha Dhamma. Matters not. Hindu Dhamma. Jewish Dhamma. That's all Dhamma. The Dhamma is what the mind bears. Right? We talked about this. So they, whatever Dhamma they are able to preach, whatever Dhamma they are able to deliver to mankind, all of it is intended to help us all identify what is common amongst ourselves. The common problem. But lo and behold, and quite unfortunately today, religion itself is used for people to separate themselves. They stand fast to say, I am of this religion, you are of another religion, so you and I, we can't get along. You know, nowadays we only have washrooms that are like gents and females, right? In years to come, I think there'll be washrooms like for Buddhists, washrooms for Muslims, washrooms for Christians, and so on. Because the human mind, and a mind that is ridden with ignorance, constantly seeks separation. It looks to identify itself as a unique entity. I'm only scratching the surface here. We will get to the profoundness of some of these points as we progress in our talks. What prompted me to talk about this was, at the end of last week's talk, one of you came and asked me, Swami Nahansa, you say everything is a process. That it's all common. It's just one form taking another form, and that is what a manifestation is. Like we talked about the rain example. A rain and a fountain are simply different manifestations of the same causes, right? If that is so, then what is unique about you and I? You are different to me. I am different to you. And I sense that, don't you? Yes, so what is unique about you and I? The answer to that question was, you're asking the wrong question. We seek answers to what is unique. Therefore, wherever we are in a circumstances or situation where we are presented with whatever, we use that to convince ourselves that we are unique. When you look at yourself in the mirror, you see a form. You see your body. You identify yourself as either male or female. And in that, you identify yourself as unique. I'm a male and I'm unique. I'm unique from the females. There you go. That's the first separation. If you're a female, of course, the other way around. And then you keep on standing. You remain stood in front of the mirror and then you look at yourself and you go, I wear spectacles. So I am unique. I'm unique from those who don't wear specs. Another factor for division. Here I'm talking about things that meet the eye. Perhaps you look at the color of your hair or your complexion. Maybe you're fair skinned, maybe you're dark skinned. You look at that and you go, I'm unique. I'm unique from those who are not like me. See, the mind is constantly looking for evidence from the outside world as to what separates me, what makes me feel unique from the rest of them. We are so obsessed with this. As I continue with my explanation, you will understand this. We are so obsessed with this. We like to dress differently to each other because that helps us stand out of the crowd. Helps us stand out. We like for others to recognize us. What is recognition after all, if not an attestment or an attestation of uniqueness? If I am recognized for my achievements, if I am recognized for coming first in class, if I am recognized for my qualifications, be that professional, be that educational, whatever, is that not a recognition that I am unique? I didn't expect to jump into deep waters right at the beginning, but apparently that's where we are. So I want you to play along with me. When you identify yourself with someone, or when you identify yourself to someone, right, they'll ask you, who are you? And one of the first things that will come to our mouths is, I am, and your name, right? Your name is a factor that you have used to separate yourself from everybody else. It makes you feel unique. And you thrive in that uniqueness. It makes you feel good when you are unique. You like to feel unique. You like to feel that there's only one of you. Yes, we have to have companionship. Absolutely. I can't be alone. I have to be with somebody else. I need more unique people to be with me. That's what I need. Just think about what I'm trying to explain to you here. If you work in an office, the higher up they go in the hierarchy, this is typical, I mean, it's not everywhere, but typically, if you are a senior officer, if you're a senior manager, for instance, you know, you get your own desk, you get a special chair, a swiveling chair, right? The higher up you go, you get more facilities. Perhaps you get your own office, and that office has to look different to the office next door. That your chair, if it has, it's a high back, and if it's more cushiony, if it's of a finer leather, you know, all these things help you to identify yourself as a unique individual. Special treatment. You enjoy special treatment. It's all right. There's nothing to be embarrassed about. Although it might seem embarrassing. This is just the nature of the human mind. You like to be treated specially. People like special treatment. This is part of our ego. Part of our pride. You like to stand out of a crowd. Just have a think about, you know, some of the things that people invest in. Material things that people like to gain for themselves. I'm only talking about the human condition. All right? I need you to understand that. I'm not talking about any of you individually. I'm just talking about the human condition. This is what the mind is like. If your mind is like that, then it's just time for you to understand yourself, that's all. This is not an accusation. This is not an offense towards anybody. Although it might feel like it, it's not intended to be. I'm just talking about the human mind. See, when I talk about sensuality, when I talk about lust, right, is there anyone here who've never experienced it in their lives? Boy, are you from Mars or something? We've all gone through those, right? We've all been through those emotions. When we talk about anger, right? That is not something to be proud of. But we've all been through that. So when I talk about anger, you understand that I'm not offending anyone. I'm just talking about the human condition. When I talk about jealousy, I'm not intending to offend anyone. I'm just talking about the human condition. Here's what I want you to do. Listen to these words and try and identify yourself moments where you might have experienced these emotions. Here's what I don't want you to do. I don't want you to think that Swami Nuhanse is personifying these emotions, these conditions, and targeting me. That's not what I'm doing. Because frankly, I don't know any of you that well to know who's who and what's what. I don't know whether you're a good person or a bad person. I don't know. I don't know whether you're jealous or whether you get angry a lot or whether you're just a happy-go-lucky person. I don't know. I don't know enough about you to make any of those judgments. But here's what I do know. I know about the human condition. Although we all feel that we are unique, what is true is, inside each of those bodies is a mind. And the Buddha's teaching is about the mind. He teaches about defilements. He teaches about hindrances. He teaches us about cankers. All of these affect the mind, not you. What does it affect? The mind. Do you have a mind? Well, there you go. That's why they affect you. Not because you are you. Not because you are male or female. But because you have a mind. And these are conditions that affect the mind. So I'm talking about the mind. Think about the way you like to brush your hair. When you prepare yourself for a party, right? When you're getting ready for a party and you know who is might be coming, right? You stand in front of the mirror and dress yourself up, patch yourself up, right? Do all sorts. Don't you like to do your makeup or prepare yourself in a way that you can stand out when you get there so that people will say nice things about you? So that when people see you, they'll recognize you. They'll say good things about you. They'll say, oh, you look nice. At least you want them to feel that way. Maybe not say out loud, but at least when they see you, you want to look presentable. Because you are unique. At least you feel that way. The car you drive, the house in which you live, the street in which your home is, all of these things, the watch that you wear on your wrist, what brand is it? I just want to take a moment to think about these things. Now, you don't have to come and hide your watch next time you come here. It's all right. I'm not talking about anyone individually. Please understand that. Otherwise, you'll think that Swami Nuhanse is offending us from the moment he got here. No, I'm not. I'm only talking about the what? The human condition. I'm just talking about the mind. Because I know how minds work. You may know how business empires work. Right? You may know how schools work. You may know how banks work. You may know how technology works, and I know how the mind works. That is what gives me liberty and authority to sit on this chair and talk to you. Because you all come here with a mind, but here's what you don't know yet. What? How? How the mind works. You have one, but you don't know how it works. That is why you are riddled with suffering. That is why you go through these emotions which you are not proud of. That is why you go through moments that you later on regret and you wish you'd never experienced them. That is why you go through grief and sorrow and fear, ever hopeful, one day maybe I can work a way out of this. That is because you still don't know how the mind works. But you know how the economy works. You know how the country works. You know how parliament works. You know that. But what you don't know is how the mind works. So this is a series of talks of how the mind works. Do I have your permission to continue? Yes? Thank you. So, once again, This, none of this is meant to offend. Okay? It might feel offensive, but it is not meant to offend. I don't want to sugarcoat things. Because I don't think you're investing a Saturday of your week to come here to hear me sweet talk you. I think you get plenty of that Monday to Friday. From your co-workers and your subordinates and the members of your family and those who wish to borrow some money from you. You know that, huh? Those who want favors from you, you get plenty of sweet talking from them. I don't think you need me to sweet talk you because I'm not here for any favors from you. So I shan't be sugarcoating you. I won't be sweet talking you. I'll just be telling you the bare facts and the bare truth as it is. Because the sooner you come to your senses, the sooner you realize the truth, the sooner you shall be free from all those things that torment you and bother you. Ignorance is the only culprit here. All suffering you know already is rooted in ignorance, right? You know this. You know this well before I started talking to you. Because you might have read it in a scripture, might have heard it in a sermon, right? Maybe in a pirith chanting. Avidya, 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 avidya in Pali, ignorance in English, right? You know this. Wherever there is ignorance, there's going to be suffering. If you're ignorant about how to use a needle, thread the needle, if you're ignorant of how to use a needle, won't you suffer? Why do you not allow young children to play with sharp things? Because they're ignorant. But you only allow them to play, not play, but use them once they come to learn how to use a knife, right? How to use a pair of scissors, how to use a needle. Once you teach them that, and once they learn that, then it's okay. But until then, you've got to be very careful because what you're ignorant of will typically cause you a lot of harm. So, if you're ignorant about the mind, now what happens? This is what's happening. That is why you suffer. So you look for uniqueness. The way you wear your hair, you look for uniqueness. The way you talk, you look for uniqueness. You enjoy feeling unique. Because that is your sense of identity. It is the greatest desire of the mind to identify oneself as unique. That is why when you meet someone perhaps for the first time, you know, say it's a business meeting or something like that, you know, you share ideas amongst yourselves. Yes, of course, you look for common ground, a common area so that you can start off a conversation, continue a conversation. But first of all, you have to establish who they are and who you are. You heard the concept of the alpha male? Yeah? So in a group of males, there's an instinct for the human mind to identify the alpha male. And if that's you, all the better. These are human tendencies. These are tendencies of the mind. So what is it that makes you and I unique? That's the wrong question. The right question to be asking is, why are you looking for something that is unique? Why do you seek uniqueness? And the answer to that is ignorance. For as long as ignorance prevails in the mind will look to identify what it is that sets you and I apart. Let me give you a further example just to prove the point. Think of a loved one. You may wish to hold their hand, for instance, because it makes you feel good. Right? You think of it as a gesture of affection. You'll hold their hand. You do this out of ignorance. Sorry to burst your bubble. But I'll explain why. Soon enough, through these talks, you'll begin to realize that this is simply matter against matter. This is simply matter against matter. So what is this? Matter rubbing against matter. Right now you're telling me this is my left hand, my right hand. Because you look at me and you see both of these hands connected to a left arm and a right arm and the arm connected to this body. That is Swami Nuhanse. So this is Swami Nuhanse's arm then. This is Swami Nuhanse's left and right arm. So by extension, this is Swami Nuhanse's left hand and Swami Nuhanse's right hand. Right? So all of these belong to Swami Nuhanse. Yeah? But when there's another person that you identify as a separate entity, a separate being, a unique being. Now you are unique and they are unique. When you hold someone's hand, you don't feel that it's just matter against matter. You actually feel that you're touching someone, and that someone, if it's perhaps someone of the opposite gender, that feels special. Does it not? Feels special. There are codes of conduct. And I don't mean just, in the monastic code of conduct, but, socially, there are social norms. If you are someone of the male gender, then you have to keep a certain distance from someone who is of the female gender. If they're not your mother, if they're not someone related to you, that you have to keep that distance. Because they are unique and you are unique. I'm trying to prove a point to you here. But this is matter against matter is what I'm telling you. But you don't see it that way. You don't perceive it that way. Let's try and figure out why. This matter, take my hand, is formed out of the food that I put into my mouth. Is it not? So, whatever you eat, this is just the stuff that you've eaten, reconfigured. Agreed? Like water, rain, fountain, reconfigured. Were you all here last week? Okay. So the same water, just reconfigured. So, when I eat rice, I just take rice because it's a staple food for us. When I eat rice, that rice goes into my body and it gets reconfigured. My DNA is the blueprint for that, the DNA in this body, right? And then as the nutrients get to the cells, to the circulatory system. And as it gets here and the cells start dividing, it uses the nutrients in the food that I've eaten to make my hand. Yes? The same pot of rice is eaten by someone else. Say someone among you. You eat from the same pot of rice. When that rice goes through your digestive system, is ingested, and then gets to your body, and then is rearranged as your hand. Now you say that is your hand, and then you say this is my hand. But what is it after all? Where were the building blocks for all this? From the same rice pot, or from the same pot of rice. Yeah? So, well, it was all the same pot of rice, you couldn't identify me from you. Yes? When it was all in the same pot of rice, it was just a pot of rice. But digested, ingested, now one's gone into making this body, another half of it has gone into making your body. At this point, you begin to perceive that there is me and there is you. Don't you think that's just bizarre? At what point does rice become you and rice become me? So then, let's go back to the example. I say this is matter against matter. In fact, I could even say this is rice against rice. Don't you agree? Is this not rice against rice? But to you, what is it? A hand against a hand. Now you're glad that this hand belongs to me. Imagine if this hand belonged to another body. And that body being a female body. Now if Swami Mahansi put his hand on that female hand, what would you say? You'll have all sorts to say. I'll have hell to answer to. So, now have a think about it. So, how come when you hold someone's hand, someone of the opposite gender, you feel special, don't you? Just take for example, you know, your wife or your girlfriend. When you hold their hand, you feel special. You feel something special. You don't feel special. You feel something. You feel something special. You sense something special. It's a special sensation. Your heart starts beating faster. You feel that little, I don't know, a tingle goes through your body, runs from head to toe. You feel very special. But the truth is, it's just rice from the same pot. But at some point, that rice became you, and another half of that rice pot became her. Is it really? But you look for something unique. You look at you, you look at me, and you say, Swami Nasa, you are different to me. You are unique. I am unique. I ask you, where is that uniqueness? Why do you feel that you and I are unique? It is because of ignorance. Ignorance prompts us to go looking for uniqueness when in fact there is no such thing that is unique. Everything is just the same stuff rearranged. Different arrangements of the same stuff. Each and every one of you, ladies and gentlemen, is just the same stuff but a different arrangement. That's why you look different to each other. We all eat the same stuff. Yes, of course, there's our DNA within our bodies, and the DNA is just the blueprint. It's the architectural drawing. What does it do? When you put raw materials to that machine, this machine, it gets the blueprint out. It gets the architectural drawing out, and it breaks things down and arranges them in a different order. That is why you look different. But you are all the same raw materials. If I say, for instance, take a carrot, I cut it in half. Okay, let's not do it breadthwise, I'll do it lengthwise, just to make sure that you don't think that, okay, I got the bigger half, she got the smaller half. Right, let's do it lengthwise. Now one carrot split in half. And let's say we feed two people nothing but carrots. I know it's not going to be healthy, they're not going to get all the necessary nourishment, nutrients. Let's ignore that for a moment, okay? We just feed two people carrots for many years, okay? Now this is a hypothetical example, so don't you be asking me they can't survive salmonella on carrots. Yes, that's not the point I'm trying to make here. I'm trying to make a different point, so please play along. Right? So we split a carrot in half, you get one half. Let's take this, the two sides of this room. We bring a ton of carrots. We split them in half, right in the middle. You get one half, you get the other half. You can't eat anything else. Okay? So you have to live on a diet of carrots and nothing more. The same carrots split in two. Okay? So your bodies will take that carrot, break it down, and start making what you call you. Your hair, right? Your skin, your muscles, your bones, whatever a carrot is able to make, it'll make. And let's just assume that all your body needs is carrot. Let's assume you're just rabbits, okay? So all you need is carrots, right? So you can survive on a diet of carrots. In 3 years' time, okay, take a year's time, all that you have in your body is carrots, right? Nothing more. But you'll still feel that you are you and they are them. Is it not the same carrot that we split into? So when did carrot become you? This person that you identify as yourself? At what point did a carrot become you? Is it at the point you cut it? So if it's at the point you cut it, like I'll take this betel leaf. Split it in half, you get one half, they get the other half. If it is at this point, it has already become you, then I couldn't do this and give them this and give them that. I couldn't swap them around. Do you get the point? If at this point, you're telling me that it has already become me, this is you and this is you, right? Then, if so, I couldn't swap them around and give the this team this half and this team the other half, because it has already become you. So then, if this team eats this, then they will become you eventually. And they eat this, you'll become them eventually. Does that ever happen? Of course not. You will always and forever remain you. Your structure and your sense of self will always remain. So then it is that not at this point that it happens. What about when you put it in your mouth? No, I'm not going to do that for demonstration. Right? When you put it in your mouth and you start chewing it and you swallow it and it starts digesting in your body and then it gets ingested into your body and then it travels throughout your body and starts making parts of your bodies. At what point does it become you? I ask you. Are you not everything, all the stuff you've eaten so far? How about you? Are your bodies not the stuff that you've eaten so far? You know, right from your younger years, right to this day, whatever you eat is what you've become. Whatever you eat is what you've become. If, let's say, all of it came from the same pot, it came from the same vessels, then at what point did you become you and you become you? So this is food for thought. Despite this, you ask, what is unique? You're asking me, what is unique? Why am I unique? Or how am I unique? How come you and I are different beings? Are we really? This is the question I want you to ask yourselves. Are we really all that different? The truth is, ladies and gentlemen, you perceive this uniqueness. You perceive that you're different. Because the mind can perceive whatever it wants to perceive. The mind can easily be fooled, easily be tricked. How many times have you mistaken someone for somebody else? Yeah, so can't it be fooled? Can't the mind be fooled? Can't the mind be tricked? All the time, of course. What is magic if not a trickery of the mind? When you watch someone do magic, you enjoy watching it because it tricks you. You're surprised, you're perplexed as to how such a feat could be achieved because it doesn't seem possible that something like that could be done. It is only magic to you. It is not magic to the magician. It is pure logic to the magician. But you pay to go watch him do magic, don't you? In other words, you're happy to pay to be fooled. Yes? I'm sorry. I just have a very weird way of looking at things. Haven't you picked up on that? I'm just a very sad person. All the good and fun and enjoyable things in life, I just take a very miserable look at all of those things. Just a very sad person. You pay big money to go and enjoy a magic show. They don't come cheap. But you enjoy that. You enjoy watching magic. But it's not really magic, it's just logic to the magician because they know what's going on. So if it's magic to you, it's only because you don't know what's going on. You are fooled. You are tricked. Now then, when you hold your girlfriend's hand, you feel magic, don't you? Yes? Come on. When your wife gives you a kiss? She doesn't do that anymore, Swami. That was before we got married. Okay, at least then. Didn't that feel like magic? Yes. Why was it magic? Because you just didn't see the logic. That's why. Wherever you experience this sensation of magic, folks, it's only because you don't see the logic behind it. There is nothing in this world to be surprised about. It's just fact. Everything can be explained. It's all a science. Everything is driven by cause and effect. It is a universal phenomenon. Nothing is an exception to that. Everything under the sun and beyond can all be explained through the principle of cause and effect. When we don't know this, when we don't understand it, to us it seems magic. That is why, like I said last week, when man first discovered fire, can you imagine what it must have been like? Right? Just taking two rocks, rubbing them against each other, right? And a spark jumping out of that and lighting up something. You know, maybe like a twig or something, and then a fire. Can you just imagine yourself in that situation? If you were that man who first discovered fire, you know, you would have thought, what is this? Is it a beast? Is it some kind of animal? Some kind of apparition? What is it? And you try and touch it, and it burns you. And it starts spreading. You don't know how to deal with it, because you've never seen it before. You don't know it. You don't know where it came from. And you don't know where it's going to go. And then, you know, if say for instance you watched it for a little while, and after a while the fire dies. Now what are you going to wonder? Where did that go? Because a dead fire doesn't look anything like a fire, does it? A dead dog looks a bit like a dog. Yeah? But a dead fire doesn't look anything like a fire. So can you imagine what man must have felt like when he saw a fire lit up and a fire burn out? So he began to ask the question, where did it come from and where did it go? Now to him that was magic. So if there's a magic trick, there has to be a magician. Where's that magician? Upar. He's up there. He's up there. So he says, oh magician, almighty magician, how did you do that? Do it again? Because he doesn't understand the logic. That's all. But soon enough, that mistake happened again. The mistake of rubbing two stones together and a fire lit up, that happened again and again and again. And then soon enough, man discovered patterns. Ah, I see. So when these two things rub, then God gives fire. He didn't figure it out all at once. Right? So what he realized was, when I rub these two things together, then God puts fire there. That's where fire comes from. But then one day it was wet. It had rained. Then he was rubbing these two stones together and there was no fire. And then, God, come on, dude. Where's the fire? So then they realized, so it can't, on wet days, God's off. He takes a day off. So on wet days, I can't just rub two things and, you know, he's not going to give me any fire. So what do I do then? I have to wait for a dry day. So then he realizes you can't just have two things rubbing against each other and friction alone is not enough, but it has to be dry. In other words, there has to be the right environment for it. You have to be able to heat things up. See, now you can think along these lines, and eventually he realized that God only gives fire when there's temperature, there's a flammable object, and there's oxygen. So when those three conditions are there, now God gives fire. Scientific thinking came along later on and said, no. Now God has no part to play. You just need these three factors and there's the fire. But you still feel that no, it's still God doing that. I'll tell you why. Because you feel that there is a fire there. That a fire exists. You believe that there's an entity called a fire. You know well and truly, science has taught us that it is for only as long as the causes are there can a fire manifest. But until we get into our heads the concept of manifestation, causes and effects, we still feel that there are the causes and there is effect. Just like this tool here. See, when you look at this tool, I talked to you about this last week. When you look at this tool here, you can't help but thinking that there is a stool here, can you? Without you thinking about it, right? You don't have to forcefully think yourself to do it. Without any thought about it, you look at it. You don't have to analyze the fact that, you know, these are the four legs on a stand with the top and the nails. You know, you don't have to go through that computational process every single time. You look at it and you go, stool. Because you perceive a stool here. But when I tell you, no, ladies and gentlemen, this is not a unit, but rather causes coming together, aligned in the right order. Now you think about it in those terms. And then you see, I see, although I perceive a single unit that I call a stool, what there really is are the causes that manifest a stool. Two levels of thinking. You have the usual level of thinking, which is stool. And the second level of thinking, an elevated level of thinking, causes together manifests a stool. See if you can switch from those two. I'm sure you can do it yourself. When I ask you what is this, you go stool. But then I say, hold on, causes coming together, manifesting the stool. Ah, okay, I see it now in those words. So you can deliberately, intentionally, start looking at things as manifestations rather than single units and entities. Now, I'll continue that conversation another day. But the point I wanted to make for today is, when you look for uniqueness, when you feel that you are unique, I want you to take a moment to ask yourselves, not am I really unique, but rather, why do I feel that I am unique? That is the question to ask. So, for instance, when you look at the person sat next to you, right, on your way back home, for instance, you know, you're driving along the road, right, you see people walking on the road, you see the person sat next to you in your car, right, your friend, your member of your family, right, when you look at them, you will automatically feel that they are a unique person. They and I, we are unique people. Like, we are not the same. Of course we are not the same. That is why you got married to that person. Otherwise you wouldn't get married if they were the same as you. They're different. But I want you to ask yourself the question, why do you feel that they are different? You feel magic. You feel they're magic. They are a unit. They are an entity. They're a person. They're an individual. But you know well and truly that you both ate of the same pot of rice. When it was all just a pot of rice, you didn't sense that uniqueness. But having consumed it, rearranged, now you feel that it's a unique and very different thing. Just like the rain and the fountain. If I ask you, is the rain a fountain? You go, no. The rain is the rain, the fountain's the fountain. But ultimately, it's just water rearranged. The arrangement of water. Is water the same as ice? What do you think? When you think about water, when you think about ice, you feel that they're very separate entities, don't you? They're very different things. They're different by their characteristics, physical characteristics, chemical characteristics. Yeah, they're different. But if you just take a moment to think about it in the terms that I'm trying to explain to you here, now you'll realize, no, it's just the same causes lined up differently. arranged differently, different manifestation. So, now coming back to suffering, that what is common for all of us, the purpose that we are here, that is what unites all of us. If everything in this world, ladies and gentlemen, are manifestations, then why should we make suffering an exception? Is love not a manifestation? Your feeling of love towards someone? Let's go back a few years, maybe when you were in a relationship with somebody. Right? When you first had a crush on someone. Right? Those sentiments, those feelings, perhaps they were reciprocated, maybe they weren't. Either way, when you looked at someone and you thought, I like this person, was it really the person that you liked, or were there conditions that you liked? Now start thinking, please. Because your lab of life is going to be where you're going to find the answers. I only have a theory. You're going to have to do the practicals in your lab of life. Right? So, here's a person that you have a soft spot for. Okay. Now, either one of this is you. Yeah? So whichever one you are, I'm talking about the other one. When you felt that soft spot, that you felt something special for this other person, you thought that these feelings were directed towards that person. Now, I'm trying to get a concept across to you, and I'm trying to use words which actually don't fit the job. But bear with me, and eventually the penny will drop. Okay? Because I'm trying to explain to you something that is not worldly. I'm trying to explain to you a concept that is out of this world, but I can only use words that are in this world. That is the problem that I have. But we can get there. You've got a part to play and I've got a part to play. So if we can work together, I'm sure it will make sense to you. So when you look at this person, now you can give it a name, right? Your first crush. Right? You can give, this is you, and you'll think of the other person, your first crush. When you looked at them, you thought that you had an affection or an attraction towards that person. Okay? But the truth is, it's not the person that you actually had an attraction to. If I asked you, what are the reasons for your attraction? What do you like about that person? Now you have a list of things that you can come up with. If you just give it some thought, you can come up with a list of things. You know, if even now you have someone you like, you're someone you're attracted to, right? Just have a think about what are some of the reasons that you are attracted to that person. Why do you like that person? Why do you feel that that person is special to you? Have a think about it. See, can't you come up with a list of things? Maybe it's the way they put on their makeup. Perhaps it's the way they dress their hair. That is also one of the reasons. I'm not saying that is the only reason, but you have a list of things. In fact, you could come up with a checklist. At the end of this, if all these boxes are ticked, I like them. So I'm putting your liking another person, your attraction to another person on the surgical table. Permission to continue? Thank you. I'm breaking it down, slicing it, chopping it, dicing it to show you that actually your attraction is not towards an individual, but rather a bunch of causes lined up in a certain way. Now have a think about why you would like this person or you would like this person. Have a think about what are some of those reasons. Maybe they're well off. Maybe you like their complexion. So for instance, I'm only using examples, okay? So please, again, no offense. Say you like someone who's fair, okay? And that is partly the reason why you like this person. Partly. Not the only reason, but partly. What if they went dark all of a sudden? What if? Would you still like that person? What if you like the dark person? What if they went fair all of a sudden? Now, you know, like the albinos, right? Where you lose the melanin in your body. And then you lose your color. So if that were to happen, how would that make you feel? Would you still like that person? Perhaps if still quite a few of those boxes are still checked. Now have a think about this. Maybe it's the way they, as I said, dress their hair. Now, take for instance, you like long hair. All right? You like long hair all the way up to the waist. That was one of the reasons you were attracted to that special someone. Now, you never told her that. You never told her that one of the reasons I really like you, because all you said was this, I like you. You never said why you liked her. Yeah? You said, I like you. So she thinks actually that you actually like her. Her. But actually, one of the reasons you like her is because of her long hair. You like a girl with long hair. Now she doesn't know this because you never told it to her. So she thinks, I should please my boyfriend. And she thinks, perhaps he likes me to have short hair. So she goes to the hairdresser and she has her hair cut without asking you. Right? And then she comes home and says, surprise! No? Wait, you think, no, Swami. No, I like the girl. I like the girl. You know, she's long hair, short hair, so what? You know, I like the girl. I like, you know, the girl. I like the girl. She comes as a package and I like her. Oh, okay. Let's carry on. Permission to continue? Thank you. You like the fact that she calls you Bubby. Or babes. Let's be posh, huh? You like that. And she only calls you that, at least you think. Because you've never heard her call that, you call someone else that. So one of these days, you know, she gets a text message. And, you know, she says, you know, babes, could you just check my phone, please? I'm expecting a text from someone. And then you pick up the phone and you see that there's a message from someone and it seems like it's a guy. Okay. So you open it and then you go back from the previous messages and then you realize that she calls him babes as well. Huh? No? Aren't these the things that start off arguments at home? And then, you thought she could cook because her mother said so. All mothers say that. You thought she could cook, right? So you invite her around, you know, say, hey, your mother says you're a good cook. I'd like to try something that you might like to make for me today. Yeah, sure. Babes, I'll go and make something for you. So she goes, takes herself into the kitchen, and she says, I'm going to cook some rice. I'm going to cook some rice and some curries for you, and we can both have that. So about an hour later, she comes back with porridge. Promised rice, delivers porridge. So you realize, not only can't she cook, but she can't even boil a pot of rice. She can't cook. She's not learned how to cook. Soon enough, these boxes, every untick it gets, this like starts to sit on a fence. It's always on a fence, in fact. Like or dislike, like or dislike. Then you realize that she always leaves the toilet seat flat. You want it put up, but she puts it flat down. People have divorced because of that. You don't believe me, do you? People who've been dating, they get married and they get divorced because they can't decide which way to put the toilet seat. She wants it up. Or rather, she wants it down, you want to put it up, right? But she always puts it down. And that alone can be enough for another box to be unticked. The way she talks, and then later on comes her in-laws. Right? Well, not her in-laws, but your in-laws. Or to be in-laws. Right? You get to meet her parents, you get to meet her siblings, and they're not the kind of people you want to hang around with. You like her, but not the package. But she comes as a package. Then, again, another box unticked. Now, in the meantime, there are other boxes that get ticked, but there are also boxes that get unticked. Soon enough, you realize that there comes a point where you decide, you know what, we can't do this anymore. If any of you have ever gone through a divorce or a split up, I think more people have split up with maybe someone who you've had an affection for, than a divorce, right? Reasons for that are these boxes that you ticked to determine that it was someone you could live with. As they start getting unticked because they don't meet your expectations, now these likes turn into dislikes. So what about this story, this fantasy that you said about, it is you I like, my dear. However you may come, right? Despite your weaknesses, despite your flaws, in good times and bad, I'm always going to be with you. All that really is utter nonsense. It is not true. What is true is, for as long as my expectations are met, I will be with you. And the same goes for the other person as well. For as long as their expectations are met, they will be with you. I got your permission to continue. I asked several times. You said it was fine. Otherwise, why do people who decide to live together then later on split up? So love is a manifestation. Your affection towards someone is a manifestation. That is why when you get advice, you know, counseling, advice, family counseling, right? Relationship counseling. A lot of the time what they'll tell you is find out what the other person likes and give them as many of it as possible. What they're saying is they'll be with you for as long as you can tick their boxes. You know, at the end of the day, this is a typical case of you scratch my back and I scratch yours. Don't be disappointed. Love is still magic. This is not intended to make any of you feel disappointed or dejected or rejected in any way. I'm just saying, let's come to our senses and understand how the world works. Everything, if everything is cause and effect, shouldn't your attraction towards someone or their attraction towards you be driven by cause and effect? Otherwise, did the Buddha get it wrong? Everything is cause and effect except for the relationship I have with my girlfriend. Huh? Can't be so. All relationships, they're all conditioned. Every entity is a conditioned entity. Conditioned meaning, for as long as the conditions exist, the effect manifests. That is the principle of conditioned entities. All things are conditioned. Now, we have air cons in this room, right? They're air conditioners. We feel a constant temperature because what the air conditioners are doing is conditioning the air. If it gets too hot, it'll cool it down. If it gets too cold, it'll warm it up. Meaning, whatever our expectations are, it'll attempt to meet. For as long as it can meet our expectations, we will be in this room. Yes or no? There you go. So if that is the analogy, how long will you be in your relationship? If we are only going to be in this room for as long as the air conditioners can condition the air to our liking, how long will you be in your relationship? For as long as the other person can condition your relationship to your liking. Why am I taking such a clinical approach to, you know, something so special, so magical? Because I want to help you. If you want a good relationship, if you want a long-lasting relationship, realize that this is the secret to it. Now Swaminarayan is giving us relationship advice as well. Wonderful. And we were dead scared that after listening to his talks, you know, our relationships would all come to an end. No, not so. I'm teaching you how a relationship works. Because if all things are subject to cause and effect, then is a relationship an exception? Certainly not. What is your life? Is that not a conditioned effect? Why do you go to the doctor once in a while, from time to time? You check your cholesterol, you check your blood sugar, you check your blood pressure, right? Because you know that there are some vital conditions that have to be at the right point to keep this body alive and functioning. So when one starts going south, you quickly start to address it, either by taking medication, doing some exercise, cutting on your diet, right? Or having more of something. See, you're constantly trying to maintain the conditions to remain alive. Yes or no? Yes or no? Yes. That is why it's so important what you put down your mouth. Because if you put in the wrong conditions, if you create the wrong conditions, then your days are numbered. So for long life, you just need to ensure that you put the right conditions. That's why they say smoking kills. Because what smoking does, it creates the conditions that are not conducive to longevity. So all things are conditioned. Therefore, all things are manifestations. All states are manifestations. The state of being alive, ladies and gentlemen, is a manifestation. The state of being in love is a manifestation. How about feeling good? A good day. You feel good. What about that? A manifestation. What about a bad day then? A manifestation. Why am I going on about manifestations? For this simple truth. If all things are a manifestation, all we've got to do to change it is find the causes. If we can arm ourselves with that knowledge, what are the causes that are responsible for this manifestation? Now you are God. Yes or no? That is why I said, if you consider yourselves Buddhists, then don't go begging, borrowing, or stealing happiness from anyone. You can be the creator, the architect of your own happiness. Suffering, you make. That's why you suffer. Because you don't know what are the causes that create suffering. You only have yourself to blame for your own suffering. Is that good news or bad news? That's wonderful news, I tell you. All these years in your life, you've suffered because you thought other people bring you suffering. Yes or no? Why do you have fights with other people? If you've ever been in an argument, what are you expecting the other person to do? Come to your point of view, right? You want them to change so that you can be happy. What foolishness! Why do you hang the hat of happiness on another person's hook? Why do you expect another person to keep you happy or make you happy? Because of ignorance. Whose fault is that? Theirs? Of course not. And you know what karma is? Let me distill it down for you. Karma is when you punish the wrong person for your sufferings, you get punished back in return. How so? Someone makes you unhappy, you whack them. Karma decides, hold on a second, you suffered because of your own bad doing, your own wrongdoing. You suffered because of your own ignorance. Why did you hit that guy? Right, let me hit you back. That's what karma does. When you don't take responsibility for your own suffering, for your own happiness, and you try to inflict punishment on somebody else, either verbally or physically or mentally, karma looks at you and thinks, so you're trying to take the law into your own hands, eh? Let me sort you out. That's why they say karma is a female dog. You just need to understand what karma is. Then you can be on top of it. See, if you want to be free from karma, all you got to do is to realize that you are the architect of your own suffering. An arahant is just that. An arahant does not accrue karma. Karmakshaya. An arahant does not accrue karma because an arahant has realized suffering is his own making. Having realized that, he has stopped the process of creating suffering because suffering is a manifestation. For as long as there are the causes, the manifestation of suffering will take place. Just as all these things. Go back to this example. Wherever you've taken, if you've ever taken counseling advice, relationship advice, right, or perhaps given it to somebody else, or seen someone go through that experience, right, every single time they'll talk about, just try and understand things from the other person's perspective. Meaning, try and find out what they expect from you. That's what they're saying. And fulfill them. Because if you fulfill their requirements, they shall fulfill yours. So usually what they'll do is they'll speak to the couple together and then they'll split them up and talk to them individually. You know, these counselors, they're not doing anything magical. They're just doing things logically. That's all. If you understood that logic, you don't need to pay big money to go and speak to counselors. You don't need counseling therapy. This is counseling therapy. It's free. The only counseling therapy you need is to understand cause and effect. If there's an effect that you expect, get it into your heads that it can only manifest for as long as the right conditions will be present. Then, go to work at it. Get to work. That's it. If you're unfit, if you're unhealthy, find out the causes that have manifested this state and go to work at it. Get to work. Because in changing the causes, you can change the effect. You don't need to do anything with the effect. Let it go. Don't get yourselves entangled with the effect. What people generally do is they go get entangled with the effect. See, that's what people do. Completely wrong. They've lost the plot. Don't you be that person. Usually people just get entangled with the effect. They curse at it, they swear at it, they accuse it. Why you like this? Why you like that? Why are you doing that? Why are you saying like that? If you stop doing all that and just go and focus on the effects, on the causes, right? Change the causes, you've changed the effect. Because all effects are conditioned manifestations. Try and get that into your heads. If you can take that away from today's talk, ladies and gentlemen, you know, you've jumped a leap ahead. All suffering, entirely, comprehensively, all suffering are manifestations, conditioned manifestations. All suffering. When you take yourself to the doctor, what does the doctor do? Say you got a backache, what does the doctor do? They'll run some tests. Yeah? They'll get you to do some, stand up, bend forward, bend backwards, you know, put up your left arm, put up your right arm, right? They might take your pressure, they might take your blood pressure, they might take, you know, put the stethoscope on your chest, try and find out your heart rate, you know, whatever, your breathing, right? They'll take some information about you and they'll look at it and go, right, these are the causes that lead to this effect. Change one cause and the effect will no longer manifest. You don't have to change all the causes, by the way. This is the beauty of understanding the principle of cause and effect. Although you need all four legs for this stool to be upstanding, you only need to take out one and the stool will drop. Although you need four wheels for a vehicle to be upstanding and to be able to travel, take out one wheel and the vehicle can no longer move. Although you need both of your legs to be upstanding, take out one leg and you will fall. That is the principle of cause and effect. For an effect to manifest, you need a multitude of causes. But for it to stop manifesting, you don't need to deal with all of the causes. You just need to take out one. Isn't that good news? Now then tell me, if suffering is a manifestation of causes, how many of those causes will you have to eradicate before you can bring suffering to an end? Just one. Just one. Good news or bad news? Wonderful news. Tanha Nirodha, Dukkha Nirodha. This is the Dukkha Nirodha Satya. Dukkha Samudaya Satya. Attachment causes suffering. You may often have wondered, is it just attachment? Is attachment the only culprit here? Are there no other factors? Perhaps there are. But why do we bother? Here's the answer. Perhaps suffering is caused by a multitude of causes. Do we need to know all of these causes? Do we? No. Perhaps suffering is caused by 10 causes. The Buddha teaches us about just one. Is that not enough? Not enough? That's fine. That's more than enough. Because if you take out any one of these causes and suffering ceases, then just take out one and suffering ceases. So that is why the Buddha says that attachment is the cause of suffering. Perhaps there are other causes, but let's not get bogged down with it. Let's not worry about it. Perhaps there are other causes. Why do we care? Because suffering is a manifestation. And with what is true about all manifestations is all of the causes have to be available and aligned to create that manifestation. Meaning, take out any one of those causes and the manifestation ceases. Aren't you glad you came today? You just need to take out one cause. Attachment. And then the Buddha shows what causes attachment. Because if suffering is a manifestation, what is attachment then? Yes? A manifestation. You know, now you can just like chant it. I ask you anything, you just say manifestations. Because all things are manifestations. There are no such things that are fixed. There are no entities, fixed entities that are independent of causes. There is no such thing. If there is such a thing, the only such thing is Nibbana. Nibbana is the only unconditioned, I can't say the word thing, that would make no sense. So I can't complete that sentence by saying Nibbana is the only unconditioned thing because it is not a thing. Nibbana is not a thing. There are two types of Nibbana. What's that? Physical and mental Nibbana. There's a Nibbana that you can achieve while you're still alive. And then there's a Nibbana that you will attain after you pass away. Parinibbana. Sopadisesa Nibbana and Anupadisesa Nibbana. Don't get worried about the words. Just get the idea. It is not the words that will set you free. It's the idea, it's the concept. That's it. Sopadisesa Nibbana is the Nibbana that we are aiming for. The Nibbana that we can enjoy while we are still alive. What is that Nibbana? That Nibbana, ladies and gentlemen, is having figured out the causes that manifest suffering, mental suffering, we cease those causes and then therefore that in turn ceases what? Suffering. Because it's a manifestation. Suffering is not a fixed thing. Suffering is not an entity that can be there regardless of the environment, regardless of the factors. It is not an unconditioned thing. Isn't this good news? Suffering is not an unconditioned thing. Because just imagine if suffering were unconditioned, what would you do then? What does that mean? If suffering is unconditioned, what does that mean? There is nothing you can do about it. It's unconditioned. Why is it bad news when someone says someone's got a cancer? Still. Because you don't know the conditions. You don't know how to change the conditions so that you can change that manifestation. Science is yet to discover that. There are small pockets of discoveries going on here and there, but, you know, largely, it's still a mystery to science. How cancer works. And the onset of cancer. They understand how cancer cells spread around the body, but they're still trying to figure out how you can permanently cure one. Some cancers, at least. So this is why, to man, this is an enigma. It's a mystery. How do I deal with this? So when you have a problem, you don't know what the causes are. Man's natural tendency is to try and put it on somebody else or something else, an unseen entity. Because man's tendency is to always look for someone responsible. Who's responsible for this? Who can we request? Who can we plead to? Who can we please? So that although I don't know the causes, if they know the causes, then they can do something about it. So you take a vatya. You go to the devas. Yeah, because I don't know what causes a cancer, but surely he must. The all-knowing one, almighty one. So you take a palatharuvatti, and you go to the deva. And you leave a few thousand rupees on top, and says, please sort my problems. This is your natural tendency. When you don't know the causes, you try to find someone who might do. And if you can't find anyone around, anyone living, then the mind feels a little bit of a relief when you can actually pass it on to somebody else. Delegate. That is what the mind seeks. Some relief. It's just looking for a vent for that vexation. Now Buddhism has, you know, the purpose of me giving you philosophy is not to help you deal with cancer, but rather to help you deal with mental suffering. So in the same way, you know, all these years, folks, you know, the reason you suffered mentally and the reason that you took it out on others, maybe the dog at home, poor thing, is because you didn't know what to do with suffering. Excuse me. Whenever suffering struck you, whenever suffering bit you, whenever suffering came into your life, you didn't know what to do about it. Whatever you knew to do were the wrong things. So therefore, it was never a remedy for suffering. It was only a temporary fix. That's why you're not content. Although we can say contentment is bliss, who is content? People know this stuff. Contentment is bliss. Contentment is bliss. Contentment is bliss. But who is content? Show me someone who's content. Although they know that contentment is bliss. So show me someone who's content. It's impossible to be content because you don't know, people don't know the causes that create within their minds a void that always looks for fulfillment. As long as this void is created, as long as this expectation is created, as long as this vexation is created, how can the mind be content? There's always a vacuum in the mind that needs filling. That is what you feel. That's why when you finish an episode, you have to watch the next one. You know, people will say, Swaminas, I'm content. You know, I don't have lots of needs and wants. You know, I live a very simple life, right? I don't have a lot of things I want, but you still have a few things you want, right? I'm not talking about the needs. Needs, physical needs. Right? You need shelter, you need food, you need medicine, you need clothes. These are the basic needs that a body needs. What about love? Do you think a man needs love? No. That's just a nice story that we like to tell ourselves. What about companionship? Do you think it's a necessity? Certainly not. These are all wants of the mind. Love, companionship, friendship, these are all wants of the mind. They're not needs. They are wants of the mind. And when the mind can't get what it wants, the mind suffers. Why is old age so painful? Forgive me. I'll clear my throat from time to time. Why is old age so painful? Why do people fear old age? Because they know that when they get to old age, right, they'll be discarded. Typically, this is what happens. You know, on the one side, I'll tell you, never do that to people you love, right? Look after your folks, you know, your parents and so on. But on the other side, I'll tell you, if you can, and if they're ready, if they're prepared for it, give them this medicine before they get to that point. That is real love, real compassion. Being with your folks in their final years, that's one thing. Excuse me. That is you fulfilling your duty. But I think you have a responsibility. That responsibility is, while they still can, while they are still able, while they can still understand, while they can still attend the sermons, or at least while you can still go home and take this message to them, give it to them so that they don't end up in that sorry state. And if that is true for them, it will also be true for you. Companionship, friendship, love, these are not needs of the mind. These are all wants of the mind. When the mind wants something, it suffers. The only way for the mind to be free of suffering is for the mind to not want anything. There is nothing the mind wants. But for as long as you believe that there are things outside in this world, such as friendship, such as love, such as companionship, such as these flowers, such as things that you like to eat, for as long as you believe that they have happiness within them, and your void can be fulfilled by consuming them, you will forever want them. This is all because of ignorance. And for as long as the mind is ignorant, your mind will always be in a state of a void. It will be a vacuum looking to be fulfilled. But that is not the right answer. So therefore, whatever you drop into it, it's like a black hole. It's like a bottomless pit. Everything you drop into it, it comes out the other end. You know, it's like trying to fill a pot that has a hole at the bottom. How much water can fill it, I ask you? Don't you feel that life has been like that? How many films have you watched by now? If you enjoy watching movies, how many of them have you watched by now? You like watching movies, right? All right, put in movies. What happens? Comes out the other end. You can never fill this pot. That is why, after having watched so many movies, you still want to watch the next one. If someone says, there's a new movie out, what is your internal instinct? Where? When? Who? Can I? For some, it may not be movies. For some, it may be other things. Like maybe some of you like gadgets. How come the Apple company is so successful? They exploit your weakness. I've got nothing against them. Because it is not their fault. It's not their fault that you haven't fixed up your hole. It's not their fault. That's what you're coming here for now. So you can patch this up. So you can finally become content. For as long as you have this here, you can never be content. You can be patient. Yes. But do you enjoy being patient? Please be patient. Do you enjoy hearing that when someone says that? Please be patient. I'll be with you shortly. When you ring someone, maybe a supplier, right, or some service provider, do you enjoy being held up on the line? Please be patient. I'll be with you shortly. You go to the shop somewhere, you say, please be patient. I'll be with you shortly. Do you like being patient? Of course not. Yes, patience is a virtue. But you only have to be patient because you are a patient. Heal yourselves and you will no longer need to be patient. Because you will not have this void that needs to be filled. Because your pot can be filled. But right now there's a hole in the bottom and therefore whatever gets put in leaks out. That is why even to this day, right? Think about the last time you went on a trip somewhere, maybe around the country or maybe somewhere else abroad. Was that which trip was that in the sequence of trips you've taken this far? Is that the last one? Are you never going to go on another one? Can you promise me that? How many times have you gone on a trip, but you want the next one as well? Yes or no? How many times have you gone to a restaurant to try something new, to try something nice, but you always want the next one? How many times have you listened to something, maybe music, if you like music, but you want the next one because your mind is not fulfilled? It cannot be, because there's a gaping hole here. That is why. The Dhamma is to help you patch it up. I used to be like you folks. That is what gives me the liberty to talk to you freely like this. That is what gives me the authority to speak to you. I used to be like you. I used to be in the same conundrum. Every weekend I used to watch movies. And I would look forward to the next weekend. And I thought, that is life. weekend to weekend. Huh? That is life, you know, and for as long as we're alive, we've got to do something to enjoy ourselves. And I thought enjoyment, fulfillment of life was just something that we always had to do something for. It was like I always have to go after happiness. Happiness never came to me. With this philosophy, you don't have to go after happiness. Happiness comes to you. How about that? When you want to feed the dog, would you rather go around the house looking for the dog, or would you rather have a whistle? You blow it and the dog comes to you. Which one's better? First or the second one? Goes without saying, right? Because if you have to go looking for the dog, where are you going to start looking? Where are you going to finish looking? Under the bed? In the kitchen? In the outhouse? Under the car? Where do you look? And he doesn't answer. You'll have to go running around the house. Maybe he's left the garden. Maybe he's gone to the next door, looking for a friend. Huh? Then you have to go look in there as well. But if you had a whistle, blow the whistle and the dog comes to you. See, you can do the same with happiness. You blow the whistle and happiness comes to you. Now you can be content. This is because this is what your mind is like. This analogy is for that. This is what your mind is like. It's a bottomless pit. See, there's no bottom. See? So you can put in an infinite amount of things in here and it'll never fill up. That is why your lives are cursed. You know I speak to you with compassion, right? Do you? I hope so. These words might sound harsh, but if you can just focus on the intention with which I speak to you. I speak to you with compassion. I want you to fix this problem for yourselves. Because there's going to come a day, folks, where your ears are going to give up. Your eyes are going to give up. Because they are mechanical devices. They can only last for as long as they can last. Your legs are going to give up. Then how are you going to go on your trip? Wheelchair can only get you so far. Yes, the wheelchair can only get you as far as the sofa. From there on, everyone else at home will be going on a trip. Say, bye, Mama. We got the maid to make the food for you. We go on a trip. We'll send you the pictures. Then you're asking, please, why can't you take me? I also want to go on a trip. But you can't, Mama. Your legs won't work, Mama. I don't want to see you in that pitiful state. Is that not out of compassion? See, when that day comes, folks, I can't help you. It's too late then. That's why I'm trying to help you now. Because your mind is like this vessel that has a hole in it, and therefore this is a wanting that can never be fulfilled. So as I said, you know, some of you like your gadgets. That's how companies make their money. You can't blame them for that. That's how they do business. It's your fault for not fixing this hole. So every year they'll bring the latest one out and they'll say, oh, here's the next best one. And then you give the old one to your little brother. Huh? And then you go buy the new one. People queue up for days. See how bad their wanting is? Things that they wouldn't do for their mother. They don't have the time to go and look after their mother. I'm not talking about anyone specifically. I'm just talking about generally. Right? They don't have the time to go and look after their elderly mother, but they have the time to stand outside an Apple store for 3 days. They'll camp outside an Apple store for 3 days, but they don't have the time to look after their father. That is because there's a bigger wanting for the new iPhone, then there is a wanting to look after one's mother. That's why. Whenever the mind wants something, the mind will come up with creative ways in which to achieve what it wants. But unfortunately, no matter how much effort you put into it, it will never fill up. Never. You are living and breathing evidence of that. All these years, folks, you've been doing so many things, but you have never achieved contentment. That's why you still have a TV at home. I don't have one. But I used to. But I found the answer. He gave the answer. He is the answer. Don't you want it? How you don't have to be a slave to anybody anymore? Material or immaterial? I mean, aren't you sick and tired of this slavery? You know, you can claim to be lord of the empire, right? You can claim to have so many maids, perhaps at home, who does everything, right? From the washing to the dishes to, you know, they do the school run, they clean the house for you, and you can even think that you are the boss, but you are also a slave. You are a slave to your desires. You're a slave to your desires. That's why they call it desire. You're a slave. Yes, sire. Can you say that, no? I want to give you freedom. Freedom from this slavery, this nonsense. I mean, if it could be filled, like, you know, even if you could live 1,000 years and fill this up, I wouldn't talk about it. I'll just let you live for 1,000 years and try and find a way that we can extend your life to 1,000 years. I'd play game. I'd be game for that. But no matter how long you live, folks, this pot can never be filled because it's got a hole underneath. It's impossible to fill this. Not improbable, it's impossible. Free yourselves. There may be things you like to eat, for instance. You know, maybe you like your tarts, maybe you like your cakes, maybe you like your puddings, maybe you like your ice cream, maybe you like, you know, I don't know, savory dishes, whatever. Maybe there's a particular thing that you like to buy from the store. Every time you go grocery shopping, that item always has to get into the shopping cart. Yes or no? You know I'm talking about you. Even if someone else does the shopping at home, you'll always say, please get that for me. Maybe it's a cookie. You like it. Maybe it's a soft drink. They always have to get one for you. Aren't you a slave now? You think you're independent? How so? You are a slave. You slaves. I used to be one. That's why I'm talking to you. Come on. Free yourselves. The Dhamma will free you. You'll find a way to patch this up and then you'll no longer have these wants. I used to love. I was a foodie myself. I used to enjoy my food. Gourmandizing was a hobby of mine. My wife and I, we used to travel every weekend, you know, whenever we got the time, we'd go from place to place, traveling around the country, trying out different cuisines. And watching films and so on. Enjoyed that a lot. But I could never be satisfied. So I thought, if I had the means to do it, I can be a happy man. Therefore, I tried always to try and find the means for it. Keep those things accessible. Have the money for it. It was painful to wait 3 hours for delivery. Therefore, I drive and get it. I remember those days, there was this ice cream joint in central London. Believe you me, I drive 50 kilometers in traffic to have an ice cream. Do you see how desperate I was? And then another 20 kilometers from there was a kebab joint. Sometimes at 11 o'clock at night, I'd get my best friend, go round to his, get him in, and we'd drive. In traffic. Then there are the bus lanes that you have to avoid. Otherwise you get a 50-pound fine. There's hardly any parking to be found. In the middle of central London, you have to pay for your parking as well. You know, I was willing to sacrifice all that because I wanted to try and fill this pot. But I never did realize for one moment that this could never be filled. That is why I speak to you with confidence. I have overcome those problems. The Dhamma has healed me. So if it has done it for me, of course it can do it for you. When the games are on, for instance, right? When the cricket's on, when the football's on, when the rugby's on, when the golf is on, when the whatever is on, right? If you can't get yourself out of your seat, if you feel like you're glued to your seat, you're a slave. When I think of myself and remind myself of those days, the mental picture that comes to my mind is that of a dog with its tongue sticking out. You know, like when you try to tease a dog and you want to give the dog something like maybe a biscuit or something that the dog finds delicious, and you go, "Here, tummy, 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 tummy." Right? And what does the dog do? I'm not going to enact it. Right? The dog sticks its mouth out, right? Pleading. "Please, please, 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 can I have it? Please, can I have it?" Then you tease the dog, right? You pretend you throw it, and then the dog goes halfway and then comes back again. Now you can get the dog to do anything you want because you have something the dog wants. That's how you get people to do things they want, right? You have something they want, now they'll do anything to get what you have because that is what they want. So when when you're the one who has the money in your pockets, you can get people to do whatever you want so that you can give them what they want. Likewise, you know, if there's a can of Coke, and you're prepared to die for it, with a can of Coke, I can get you to do anything I want. Just with a can of Coke. With a piece of cake, I can get you to do anything I want with just for a piece of cake. Getting you to do what I want you to do, or what I want you to do, is a piece of cake. First of all, I have to make you want the cake. That's the first thing. That's marketing. I have to make you want the cake. And that's easy to do. You know all I have to do to make you want the piece of cake is to say, "Oh, this cake, it's delicious. You've got to try it. It's the best thing." And show you a picture of someone eating a piece of cake and them going, "Oh my God, it's so good." And you'll want it. You know, you first buy the advertising, right? Then you buy the product. That is why advertising is big money. People are prepared to pay lots of money for advertising because advertising is the path that gets people to buy the things that they want. Some of the actors that, you know, feature in these adverts, you know, they don't even use the product. You know this stuff. They've never used the product. And if you watch a documentary on some of these things, they'll tell you. Cosmetics, sometimes, right? Sometimes the foods that they advertise, you know, they don't even use it. They don't use it. They've never used it, and not even for the advert do they use it. They'll have a plate or something with a cake on top of it, and then go like that. That's it. That's enough. Because you trust them to tell you the truth, right? They're just here for the money. You buy the cake, and the advertising company wins. Slavery. Modern day slavery. This is modern day slavery. We like to think of ourselves as an independent race. The only independent race is the Aryan race. Not Aryan in terms of the Aryan that Mr. Adolf talked about. That's not the Aryan I'm talking about here. I'm talking about the Aryan race that the Buddha introduced to this world. Aryan as in free of wanting. When you are free of wanting, folks, no one gets to call the shots but you. So whenever you feel that you are lured by something, as I used to imagine myself, you know, back then, I think of myself back then as like that, you know, just like a dog on a leash. Right? You tug on the leash and the dog comes. Insult yourself so that I don't have to. When you feel like, you know, there's something you want and you can't overcome that, you can insult yourself. No one else is doing that, right? You can insult yourself and work towards your salvation. This is why we call it salvation. Salvation from slavery. Slavery, being a slave to your own desires. See, the next time you want to do something, not need to do something, but want to do something. You understand the difference now, right? If you have to cook, you have to cook because you need to cook. Because the body needs food. But the body needs food. The body doesn't need pizza. The body just needs food. So if there's food on the plate, right? It's a wholesome meal. And then your mind says, shall we have pizza for tonight? Remember this conversation we had today. Because no, you don't need pizza. Your mind wants pizza to put into this pot. Which pot? This pot, the pot that can never be filled. That is why those companies, they can make money out of you. How many pizzas have you had by this point in your life? Far too many to count, right? You know, pizza ultimately is just a bit of dough. It's just a bit of vegetables, right? The same thing arranged a different way is a loaf of bread with some with some curry. But to you, it feels that it's special. It's a different thing. It's an altogether different thing. Why? Because a loaf of bread and curry doesn't get advertised the same way. But a pizza gets advertised. There's billions of dollars get pumped into advertising those things. It's just something we imported from Western America, or the Western part of the world. It is not something that is part of our diet. We imported that, as we've imported so many things. You know, back then our people didn't have so many wants. So therefore they had time on their hands. They had time to be with their families. They had time to go and listen to the Dhamma, to free themselves from wanting. But today, because we have been blessed with everything that the Western world has to offer us, our people are far too busy trying to find the means to get everything that they have to dish over to us. That is what has happened to our people. We are far too busy. You know, right from the food to the way to the clothes to the
to the machines, everything. Yeah, just take the things you have at home and have a look at the back and see where it's made. 99% of all the things made at home will be made outside. How did they get here? That's it. With globalization, the internet and everything, right? It's all that advertising can now reach your living room over the internet, on the television, and therefore people want it. All you need, for people to want something, for a mind to want something, all you need is a drushti. That's all the mind needs. If the mind gets a drushti, drushti is that something is pleasurable, that happiness exists in something. For as long as the mind seeks it, right? If the mind accepts that drushti, the mind will then from there on want it. When you want to interest someone you know, to go and do something with you, what do you say? What do you normally do to them? Say you want to interest someone to come and watch a film with you, what do you tell them? Everything that's bad about it? Or everything that's nice about it? You tell them everything that's nice about it, right? That is a drushti. Until you give them that drushti, they're not going to come. That is what advertising does. It gives you drushti. Drushti is a view. The view that this pot can be filled. That is the view. Whether it's a film, whether it's a song, whether it's a website, whether it's a trip, whether it's somewhere you can, you know, go-karting. All you need is a drushti, a view that it will fill this pot. Because the mind is always looking to fill the pot, because the pot is never full. It's always empty, so there's always a void. There's a vacuum that is always looking to be filled. So you're ever hopeful, but hopelessly hopeful. Forever hopeful, but hopelessly hopeful. Why hopeless? Because it will never be filled. And why is that? Because happiness does not come from the outside world. Happiness does not come in the things that you shove down your throats. Happiness does not come in the things you put on yourself. Happiness does not come on the wristwatch that you put on your wrist. See, I'm happy, I don't have a watch. I'm happy. But I used to have one. I used to like to drive nice cars. I used to enjoy that a lot. And I had my dreams. I had my dream car planned out. Drishti. Because people talk about it. It's on the magazines, it's on the newspapers, it's on the billboards, it's, you know, people talk about. Everyone's talking about, you know, what do you want to get? And they start talking about these high, you know, branded cars and expensive stuff. Right? That's a whole different lifestyle. The lifestyle itself people give drushti about. The lifestyle. Not just the parts that make up that lifestyle, but the lifestyle itself. You know, to elevate yourself to a higher social standing. All that is drushti, ladies and gentlemen. The thing is this, when that drushti lands in your mind, from then on you will start exerting yourself to achieve that. That is how you've come so far. Your whole life will be dedicated to that. You know, that is what they do. You know, set goals and start making plans and then go and achieve them. Good, but it doesn't answer the problem. It's good. I used to go and give talks to people about how to set goals and how to, you know, plan your life and plan your time, manage your time to achieve more in less time, and so that working smarter, not working harder. I used to give talks to people about things like that as well. But there's one thing I do know. None of those things will ever make you content. It's just, you know, like the donkey behind the carrot. That carrot is always one step ahead. So you're forever hopeful, but hopelessly hopeful. It's hopeless. That carrot can never be eaten. But you can smell the carrot. It smells nice. See, it seems like it can be filled. Because you don't know that there's a hole here. You don't know that. But you are evidence that life cannot be satisfied by putting things down your mouth, by putting things on your body, Right? You are evidence of that. That's why I asked you, how many times have you done all these things in your life until now, but you have not yet been content? You are not yet content. That should give you the answer that those things are not the path to contentment. Yes, contentment is bliss, but you are not on the path to contentment. That is why you are not blissful. Yes, contentment is bliss. To be content, you got to patch this up. There's only one way you can do that. Ekayano ayam bhikkhave maggo sattanam visuddhiya. Soka pariddhavanam samatikkamaya. Dukkha domanasanam attangamaya. Nyayasa adhigamaya. Nibbana satchikiriyaya. Yadi janchattaro satipatthana. There's only one way. I'm also giving you drishti. Same thing. That is also drishti. This is also drishti. That is mitcha drishti. This is samma drishti. That's the difference. Samma drishti is the drishti that you need to patch this up. Mitcha drishti is the drishti that you need to try to fill this up. That's the difference. Mitcha drishti is all the things that can go into this pot. So you just keep on shoving things in there. Never filled. Samma drishti is patch this up. And after that, you don't have to struggle so much. So, let's wrap it all up. What I wanted to explain to you today was, it's all a manifestation. Suffering is a manifestation. Just like everything else. So whenever you experience suffering, come to your senses, remind yourself of this talk that we had today. This is a manifestation. If it is a manifestation, you can be hopeful. But now you can be hopeful with a target, because you know that through these talks you will get the answers to patch yourself up. If suffering is caused by attachment, then by cessation of attachment you cease suffering. So then comes the question, how do you cease attachment? To cease attachment, you have to come to wisdom, because ignorance is what causes attachment. And then the last question is, well, how do I do that? How do I move from a state of ignorance to a state of wisdom? That is by understanding the way of the world, the way of the mind, how the mind works, what is the mind. That is why that is what we talk about here. So you see, this is all with purpose. There's a final destination I want to get you all. After you reach there, you don't have to come back here again. You are free to go and do whatever you choose. You know, like the doctor, you don't go to the doctor expecting to come back again, do you? A doctor worth his salt is not going to say, thank you for coming, come back again. I don't want to be that guy either. I'm not going to say, thank you for coming, come back again. Only come back for as long as you need this. If there comes a day where you're free of suffering, don't come back. You know, spare a seat for somebody else. Spare a sandwich for somebody else. Don't come back once you're free from suffering. Do yourself a favor, do something else with your time. Go and help others. Help others free themselves from suffering. Only come here for as long as you know that you suffer. For as long as jealousy hits you hard, fear hits you, grievance hits you, sorrow hits you, for as long as these things hit you and hurt you, disappointments, frustrations, annoyances, all these things that hit you, for as long as that happens, you feel ego, you can't control yourself, when you feel these temptations, only then, and until then, should you come here. Because here, I teach you how to fix this hole. Make sense? Permission to conclude then for today. So all things are a manifestation. Just bear that in mind. Drill it into your head, and from until next week, whenever you come across situations, like when you see objects, for instance, try and look to confirm to yourself that it is a manifestation. This board standing up on its three legs is a manifestation. It is only for as long as the causes exist does the effect exist. Your life is a manifestation. Being alive is a manifestation. Relationships are a manifestation. When you get home and you have your, say, your, perhaps your, you know, someone in the family, maybe your mother who's weak, she's on her bed, look at her and ask yourself, what is the manifestation here? How come she's still alive? There are still causes that keep her alive. Soon enough, one of those causes will cease. And when that cause ceases, if you can't get it fixed medically, she'll be gone. That's it. What we do is to try and keep those causes operational. We try and keep those causes running. That's why we give her the drugs. That's why we give her the treatment. That's why we take her to the doctor. To keep those causes operational. But there's going to be a day where the causes can no longer line up. And then, that's it, done. So if that's the same for her, the same goes for you as well. If your car breaks down, right? Don't see a broken down car. Try and see the causes and the manifestation. A broken down car is a single object. But cause and effect is a process. So instead of seeing an object, try to see causes and effects. When you see this chair, instead of seeing a chair, try and see the cause and effect, the process of this chair being a chair. Does that make sense to you? Do try that. Because it is through that practice, you will begin to understand some of the concepts that I'll be sharing with you in the future talks. Right, let's conclude for today then. And bring the sermon to a close by transferring the merits that we have all acquired to all those who deserve it. All right. So, first and foremost, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teaching, and with immense gratitude towards the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas, who have transferred these merits to them. For they have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down to the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all of the chapters who dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us not forget that amongst them are the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us take a moment to transfer these merits to my teacher, Guru Swami Nuhansi, as well as all the monks resident at the monastery and the Anagarika and Anagarika communities attached to the monastery. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by transliterating these talks, sharing them out with others, or inviting others to join them. And by the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to the devotees of the monastery, friends of the monastery, who for the sake of merits to help them attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who have supported the construction of the monastery to those who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes and medicines, as well as those who continue to extend their well wishes and their know-how. May they all rejoice in these merits. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our mothers and fathers, husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our friends, our acquaintances, our teachers, those who have helped us, supported us and assisted us. May they all rejoice in these merits. By the power of these merits, may they all be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to the devas and brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who have committed themselves towards the preservation and fulfillment of the Sambuddhasasana. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our guardian deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. By the power of these merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our loved ones who have passed away in our name, to those who have predeceased us, our ancestors, our forefathers, for it is in their bloodshed, blood, sweat and tears that they have shed. Today we enjoy the comforts and are able to practice the Dhamma and attain our Nibbana. May they all rejoice in these merits. Let us also transfer these merits to the members of the armed forces as well as the police force who sacrifice their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation as well as those who lost their lives in the wars, be they friend or foe. Let us also transfer these merits to those who have lost their lives in natural disasters and calamities, such as the tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides, fires, blizzards, and pandemics, reminding ourselves that in this infinite long journey of samsara, they will all have been brothers and sisters to us, mothers and fathers to us, sons and daughters to us, friends and family to us. May they all rejoice in these merits for all they have done for us. Gratefully, with compassion and loving kindness, let us transfer all the merits we have acquired to all of them. By the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful planes, they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, may by the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arahants on this blessed land. And finally, may you and I, and everyone who's helped make this program a success, become a Rahatan Mahanse or an Arahataranin Mahanse in this very life itself and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. The members of the Mahasangha will transfer their blessings to you.
Raga ginnam idatnva Dvesha ginnam idatnva Moha ginnam idatnva Nibbana parana sukhayan Sukhita taravetna Nibbana parana sukhayan Sukhita taravetna Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satmayo Nibbana parana sukhayan Sukhita taravetna Nibbana parana sukhayan Sukhita taravetna Nibbana parana sukhayan Sukhita taravetna Raga gini niveva Dvesha gini niveva Moha gini niveva Nivansata labeva Nivansata labeva Nivansata Adeva
Tundruange Suvisi Ananta Maha Gunabelen Sira Loka Sira Satyoma Nibbana Paramasukhen Sukhita Daravitva Sadhu, Sadhu, Sadhu. I hope you don't think I'm too stern. It is not my intention. I know where I was, and I know where I am now, and I know that it can be done for all of you. But I want to, for you to have a sense of urgency for this. Appamadena sampadayata. I see a future for you where if you don't understand this, you will suffer, as my grandparents do today. I can't help them. Now it's too late. You'll all have lived good lives, I'm sure, but a life where you haven't understood the Dhamma is not a good life at all. At the end, you will have no one to help you, no refuge. I can help you now, that is why I want to help you now. So please do understand, and I apologize if I have offended anyone, if anyone feels hurt, because if you feel that I was too stern, that is not my intention. It is only out of compassion that I speak to you. But if you think I am too stern, then do let me know, and I'll speak to you much more softly. Okay, Pingmatuni? Hello, Sam.